And now I'm here with Mike Hart, the president and CEO of Sierra Energy. Founded in 2004, from what I understand. Mike, tell us about your company. We want to know your entrepreneurial journey.
Sure. Well, to start with, we have a number of railroads. Sierra Railroad Company has been around since 1897. We operate the Skunk Train, Sacramento River Train. So we have a lot. In fact, one of the trains on the Napa Valley Wine Train is one of ours. So it's we have a lot of railroad operations, and we have 24 locomotives. And one of the things that I try to do is, you know, a railroad obviously is the most environmentally good way of moving freight, but how can we do it better? So we became the largest user of biodiesel. So we started using biodiesel, and I had friends at UC Davis say, can you make biodiesel better than using a food crop? So the answer was garbage. So we started taking garbage, and the idea was to take garbage and turn it to fuel. And the way to do that was through gasification. That's where the technology came from.
So where do you get the garbage?
So you can use any kind of garbage with our technology, black bag garbage straight out of your house. It's like Mr. Fusion practically. Take any kind of waste, put it in the gas fire, and it breaks it down into three things: liquid metal, liquid stone, and synthesis gas. That synthesis gas is carbon monoxide, CO, and H2, hydrogen. With those building blocks, you can make ethanol, you can make diesel, you can make renewable hydrogen, or you can make electricity. So it's a fundamental building block, and it's cleaner than natural gas and has no emissions from the process.
And are you one of the only people doing that? Because I'm not hearing about this other than your business, Sierra Energy.
Sure. Gasification has been tried before. Generally, you can do it. It just has been too expensive to be economically feasible. Usually, they use plasma, which is a way of creating plasma, making a very high temperature. But it's very difficult to manage the waste, and it's also... It just doesn't make money. And so we took the approach that you need a technology that can take waste and make energy without any form of subsidy. So it doesn't require handouts. It doesn't require any goodies. The cool thing about it is that garbage makes a huge amount of methane. In fact, right now the world's going to throw away about 2.2 billion tons of waste a year. Hmm. Put it in perspective. That's a line of trash trucks lined up from San Francisco to New York City every single day. That's how much trash we throw away as a planet.
Wow.
And every ton of that garbage makes about 6.5 tons of greenhouse gas in the form of methane. Methane's 86 times worse than CO2. Just taking our waste and doing something better with it could satisfy the entire Paris Agreement and do it profitably without any kind of government subsidy from any nation on Earth. You could do it with a profit using this technology.
And people are putting the garbage today just in a landfill. Isn't that the predominant way we're getting rid of our garbage?
Yeah, overwhelmingly so. And the funny thing is that we all feel good about ourselves that we're recycling. Well, the problem is the more we're recycling, the more waste we're creating. So the total numbers haven't really changed. The total amount of waste being thrown away is still pretty much the same. And last year, what a lot of people had been doing up until last year is we'd been declaring stuff recycled by packaging it up and shipping it off to China, where they'd burn it there, and we'd say, hey, victory, it's recycling. Well, China said they didn't want it anymore. At the beginning of last year, they changed their policy. So they weren't taking our mixed plastics, mixed papers, a lot of this really contaminated stuff that we considered recycling. So it's piling up at ports all over the world right now. We're recycling dramatically less today and losing a tremendous amount of money at that. So the problem is getting worse. As a planet, we need to move towards zero waste. We need to stop throwing away as much stuff. In the interim, until we're able to do that by working with manufacturers to make less waste in the first place, you need a technology like FASTOX that can take that waste and recycle 100% of the waste stream. And that's what we can do.
Well, you're pioneering this, and I know as an entrepreneur, and I hear these in stories all the time, when you pioneer something, it can be a battle. Walk us, because you're breaking new ground, right? Walk us through the journey. So you're the successful guy, you've got railroads, and then you've come up with this idea, and you've pressed, but you're the pioneer. There's got to be challenges.
Oh. I think was the saying, you could recognize the pioneers, they're the ones with the arrows in their backs. Yeah, it's been a stabbing pain in the rear. If I had known at the outset how much money and how much time this would take, I probably wouldn't have done it because it's just so overwhelming. When we started this back in 2004, the expectation was we'd be able to figure this out with some universities, we'd get some good consultants, we'd have this banged out within a couple of years as far as knowing whether the technology would work the way we expected. Well, it took years. We've probably spent $30 million over the course of those years trying to get the technology to the state where it's not only proven, but could be commercialized. There is a huge gap. I know people always say R&D. Those are two different concepts. They have nothing to do with
each other. Research and development.
Yeah. Research is really kind of easy, and that is that you come up with a theoretical idea, you come up with something going, wow, that's a really cool concept. Development, on the other hand, monstrously difficult. Actually taking those ideas and putting it in a way that it can be brought out into the world, that's hard. And that takes a lot of money and a tremendous amount of time.
Well, you brought up the money aspect. Where did the money come from? You've had this successful business. Did you just use that one business to parlay the success of that into Sierra Energy?
Sure. And what we've done is a tremendous sacrifice for both our employees, our shareholders, and everything else. We've taken Sierra Railroad, and we've used all of its resources for the last 14 years to put everything we have into this idea of taking Sierra Energy, developing the technology, and putting it basically putting it in the hands of people in the world. Now, to what's happened as a result of that, we have over 8,000 companies have companies and communities from around the world have approached us saying, we want this technology. We have and again, it's well over 8,000. If you go to our website, sierraenergy.com, you'll find a calculator on there that allows you to calculate the CapEx, OpEx, and return on investment for any community. In fact, every county in the United States is all preloaded with all the information about jobs created, gas, greenhouse gas averted. We've had thousands and thousands of calculations being run on this. In fact, every day we have an enormous number of calculations being run. People all over the world are using this calculator and getting the results they need to know about how they can make a difference profitably using this technology.
So the vision for the future, walk us through how the world is going to change with Sierra Energy.
Sure. I'd love to say our technology is the thing that's going to solve it all, but it's always, there's going to be many other technologies before this issue is truly solved. Other people, other companies are out there that are trying to solve the same thing. I think we're all going to play a part in it, but it's going to be a place where you can take waste and consider it a resource. I think there's going to be a day in the future where you're going to get paid for your garbage, not paying to get rid of it, but you're going to sell it because there is a tremendous amount of asset in waste. There's a huge amount of energy. There's metals. There's recyclable material in there. Right now, it's just really inefficient capturing that. It's a typical recycling center is an enormous investment for a community, and they don't make any money. They lose money on it. At some point, using our technology, you can recover everything that's in that waste. It's 100% recycling. You can take that synthesis gas made of all that plastic and stuff in your waste. Synthesis gas can also make plastic. So it can be complete cradle to cradle. Take what went in and turn it back to what you started with in the first place. That has value to manufacturers.
So I want to dive into the mind, the heart of Mike Hart. Where did you discover that you were an entrepreneur?
I've probably owned a couple of dozen companies since I was a kid. I owned a company.
All right, what was the first one?
Workaholics Anonymous was the name of the company.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I was college. I had a couple of hundred employees, and we were doing odd jobs all over the Santa Clara Valley, stripping trees during the MedFly campaign back then. That was one of our projects. We'd do anything. Anything legal was the company motto, and we brought in college students. We brought in college students, and we gave them work and just basically matched them up. It was called Workaholics Anonymous. It was a fun company.
What prompted that? I mean, that most people in college are partying, having a good time. You probably did a little bit of that, but talk to us about the entrepreneurial side. Where did that? When did it flip for you? Like, I can make some money while I'm going to school.
Sure. I think I'm just a lousy employee, and so I really needed a job that I could run. And so we started that. A buddy of mine and I started that company. I also started a company called Mai Tai, M-A-I-T-I-E. I started making Hawaiian neckties when I was a student at Davis. I was an undergrad in my fraternity, Sigma Chi. We had guys, we would go out and we started making neckties out of old Hawaiian shirts. We'd make neckties out of, because we had to wear ties to like work and things. So I started wearing these ties and like go to the casinos up in Tahoe and such. People go, man, I love that thing. How much?
Oh my gosh.
It off my neck for $25 and started a company, ended up selling in 160 countries around the world, neckties all over the world. And so I ended up selling the company. I've had a lot of weird companies, a greenhouse company in Colorado, mining company, a little bit of everything.
Do you think entrepreneurial mindset is more nature or nurture? How did you become an entrepreneur? This is a very unique story. Was it the way you were raised, or did you come out of the womb, selling stuff?
I think it's a function. I was very poor. As a child, I came from a very poor family, there was a need. You needed money. To even help cover the family expenses, and so I always worked. I think the difference about entrepreneurs, and I don't think it's as much being fearless, as much as the downside. If you can manage the downside risk, you need to do this. You want to create something, and you're willing to accept that downside risk if you can manage it.
So the downside risk in your mind, you have to get comfortable with, if I fell back to this position, I'd be okay.
I fail more than anybody I know. I fail constantly, and it's you have to be able to accept that. I every morning I wake up with probably a list of 20 or 30 things. I have a dozen businesses, and I have probably 20 or 30 things that I have to deal with. And by the end of the day, one of them turned into litigation. Another one, a complete failure. Another one, the financing didn't work out. And another thing was a complete failure because it was a stupid idea. I have to deal with that every single day of my life. And you have to become, to a certain extent, resilient to failure and recognize, just learn, figure out how to improve it, and tomorrow you wake up and you do it right.
Interesting, because I've got a number of businesses as well. Doesn't sound like it's nearly as significant as all this stuff you have going. However, I call it an emotional insurance policy, right? So inside, I'm kind of like, worst case, I'm back into the sexplex, right, where my wife and I started dating, got married, and so on. So that's my worst case. I was like, if I've got the loving of a good woman and a nice hot shower, if it all goes to, in the wrong direction, I'll be okay. Like, what's your fallback in your mind? Like, okay, if it all goes bad, how bad do you have to, or do you do that?
I have to say, the idea of an emotional insurance policy, I like that idea. From my perspective, I'll tell you candidly, with Sierra Energy, I'll guarantee you there are probably a dozen times a year where I'm usually, when I have to look at the financials at the end of the month, I'm ready to be done. Oh my God, we've lost a fortune, burn rate of $500,000 a month. Sometimes you're looking at this, just going, this is horrible. I would quit. But then you look at the other side, and that is, I don't care about the profit in this thing. That's not really what's relevant. Imagine having a technology that can change the world and satisfy the entire climate change concern. That is, regardless of where people stand on the issue about whether climate change is real or any of that nonsense, the issue is, if you could take 13 billion tons of greenhouse gas out of the atmosphere and recycle all of the waste and create a staggering amount of renewable energy by just taking this technology and putting it in the hands of people who are already standing there looking for it, how can you not do that?
I know. I hear that. I'm all in on this. I sat in a seminar last night. I'm the president of the Entrepreneurs Organization here in Sacramento, and we brought in some really cool speakers. Well, the first one ended up talking about entrepreneurship and how you got to make sure when you exit, you sell for enough money to make sure you can pay the bills, basically, and retire. And he was preaching this over and over and over. And I'm like, I had to step up. I'm never a heckler. I'm never like that heckle guy. But I had to go, aren't there entrepreneurs that want to change the world, that want to do something bigger than, make sure they can pay the bills at the end of the month?
I have to say, the stupidest thing I have ever heard of anybody wanting to do is retire. It is, without exception, it's fatal. Most of the people I know that retire get silly, soft, and stupid within a few months, and they die shortly thereafter. I can't imagine why anybody would ever do that, ever.
Yeah. Okay, so you got this great business or set of businesses. You're a family man, five kids, went to Davis. Give us a sense as to beyond the business. I mean, what's the big why? How do you piece it all together from a holistic standpoint?
I'm incredibly selfish, and I mean that just from the standpoint that I want to create things. I want to make things. In fact, I'm probably more a frustrated artist than anything else. It's just the scale of the things that I want to make. I would prefer it could be a nice watercolor that wouldn't cost a dang much, but I want to make things, and it's completely self-indulgent. And I want to create things on different railroads. This isn't about making money. It's about saving historic railroads. It's like up in Mendocino County, it's preserving the Noyo River and the Redwood Forest there. It's preserving steam trains that have been operating since 1885. The Sierra Railroad is preserving one of the most perfectly preserved gold country railroads in the country. We've got a 49-mile railroad up there. It's keeping these things alive and protecting the natural resources, creating new things. I just started a new line of rail bikes. You could sit two people side by side on this bike, and you could pedal on the railroad and go out miles. It's got a little electric assist in case there's a hill and you're lazy. But
wow,
it's awesome.
And is it available to the public yet?
Yeah, actually, we just started that, last year on the Skunk Train. And the thing is that it was an idea I had when I was in Japan. I saw they had these things, and I go, I want one of these. We came back, put it to our engineers, said, I want one of these things designed. They came back with some prototypes, and within a few months, I was falling off the rails. We had to fix it, figure out how to make it right, and by the time we had it going, it's awesome. It's this fun experience, and it just came from an idea.
What do you do to people, or what do you say to people that might be challenge you on the work-life balance concept?
I think that's one of the stupidest ideas. I mean, honest to God, I always hear, they always attribute it to millennials are big on this. And the thing is that if people actually believe that, they're not going to accomplish anything with their lives. The point is that if you're not passionate about what you do, and I don't care what it is, it could be you're passionate about Fritos, or the company you're doing, or sex, or whatever the thing is, you got to throw yourself into it. And trying to say, nope, I'm going to hold myself back so I can also do this other thing I'm mediocrely interested in, and oh, there's something else so I can pretend I'm all balanced. Balance is for idiots, man. You got to be all in, always. Whatever you're doing, you have to be completely, totally into it.
Okay, so I love this. You and I are really aligned on this. But what else would you challenge the societal norms on in terms of entrepreneurship? Any other thoughts on that?
You know, you touched on it earlier. This whole notion about exits and making sure that you make enough money and all this other sort of stuff, or making the big bucks. I truly don't care about money. That's not why you do things. If it is, go be a doctor, a lawyer, a dentist, or something. I mean, being an entrepreneur is not about the money. The entrepreneurs that I've known, they didn't care. I mean, Steve Jobs, I mean, I knew him fairly well back in Cupertino, and it was never about the money. The fact that you're doing things, you know, Elon Musk, it's not about the money. He couch surfs. I mean, having the money can be convenient. It's an accelerator. Money is something that makes things happen faster, because when you've got a cool idea and you're broke and you're trying to start it, it takes longer, and that sucks. When you're able to have more resources, you have an idea, you can do it faster with more help. That's the purpose of money. It's there to help things happen faster. And I think that people that are cursed with being an entrepreneur, because it is a curse, you don't get to have a normal life. You don't get to go to bed. You don't at the normal time. You don't get to hang out. You don't. The idea of chill doesn't mean anything to you. But if you are an entrepreneur, you're a resource to the planet. You're the people that are going to make a change happen. And it's, you know, you get some blessings. Yeah, there are some things that come with money that are cool. But mostly, it's just a resource and a tool.
So there's a lot of people out there that sort of classify themselves as entrepreneurs. Well, I'm an entrepreneur, and they don't really have this mindset. They haven't either. They haven't developed it yet, or it's just not in them, yet they wear around the badge of entrepreneur. What would you say to those people who are, you know, sort of straddling their ambition level a little bit with their behavior? What would you say to that person who calls themselves an entrepreneur, but they don't sound like you?
Being an entrepreneur is an addiction. It's a medical condition. I mean, think about it. I am the people I am most jealous of, and I'll be completely candid with you. People I'm most jealous with are people that have got 40-hour a week jobs, where 5 o'clock, man, that whistle blows, they're done. I mean, I've got guys who work for me that are on the mechanical side, or they're running trains. They're doing section work. There are guys that do construction work, things like that. What I love about their jobs, and I used to do construction and such, when it's done, I mean, when you finished your 8 hours, you are truly done. You can go home. You can fool around. You can get drunk. You can hang out. You can have, you don't have to think about your job anymore. And your weekends are truly your own. There is a tremendous amount of freedom in that. If you're an entrepreneur, your job ends when you're asleep. It starts again if you sleep. It starts again the moment you wake up. It never stops. It's 7 days a week for the rest of your life. And so if you don't have that addiction, if you don't have that curse, you're not an entrepreneur. You're playing at it. And so I'm not knocking it, because, man, you know, maybe you'll get the bug. Maybe you'll get stuck with it. But I get asked by college students. I mean, I'm out in Davis, so I get asked by college students all the time, you know, should I be an entrepreneur? Should I do this? And it's like, unless you have to be, don't. I mean, there's so much more security. There's so much more happiness, you know, in just having a different life. But you are going to be chewed up by this. I mean, I worry about my employees every day. I go to sleep going, man, am I going to make payroll this month? You know, how am I? I've never missed a payroll, but that's because I'm paranoid about it every single month. That kind of anxiety, that kind of worry, that kind of concern, that's not good for you. And if you don't have to have it, man, go have a better life.
Mike Hart, speaking words of wisdom on entrepreneurship. It is a medical condition. I want to thank you for coming on the show. I love how you're changing the planet with Sierra Energy. And even more today, I'm just so proud to have you help share the story of entrepreneurship, what true entrepreneurship is all about.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You betcha. All right. Oh!